morning. The special meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission is called to order. It is 10 a.m. August 3rd, 2011, which is the time and place for the in the North Dakota Public Service Commission hearing room, 12th floor of the state capitol, which is the time and place for a special meeting. For the record, this is Tony Clark, and I'm joined by my fellow commissioners.
Good morning, Kevin Kramer.
Good morning, Brian Kalk.
With that, we have three items on the agenda. They are all in Commissioner Kramer's portfolio.
Thank you. And they all deal with oil pipelines. Imagine that. KC1. I move the commission deem the applications complete and issue a notice of filing and a notice of hearing in the request of a Bakken Link Pipeline LLC for a waiver of procedures and time schedules, a corridor certificate and a route permit for the construction of approximately 144 miles of crude oil pipeline in Billings, Dunn, McKenzie, Stark, and Williams counties, North Dakota, case number PU-10218.
Second.
First of all, this is a hearing that's noticed for September 1st, 2011 at 10 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the McKenzie County Courthouse in Watford City, North Dakota. You might recall that last June we received a letter of intent from Quintana Capital Group for a Bakken Link pipeline. They've since changed the name, or I guess created the name Bakken Link LLC for this particular project. That proposed pipeline in June of last year was a link from basically would have run from the Beaver Lodge Station all the way down to Baker, Montana, where it was intended to be an on-ramp onto the Keystone XL line, the Trans-Canada Keystone XL line proposed to carry, of course, crude from Canada, from Alberta, Canada, from the tar sands down to the Gulf Coast. Since that time, Quintana and Bakken Link LLC have determined that rather than waiting for the proposed XL, which I think they and a lot of other people are hopeful will be built at some point, they would move ahead with this amended project and this application, which is 144 miles, mainly of 12-inch steel pipe, which is the trunk line. About 122 miles of it is a 12-inch steel trunk line capable of carrying up 65,000 barrels per day to market with a potential capacity of 100,000 barrels per day. And there's a few miles of 8-inch lateral lines from that basically provide the opportunity, of course, for the on-ramps or the receipt points. The line is going to be a bi-directional line running through the counties that I listed, named earlier, basically Beaver Lodge down to Fryeburg, North Dakota. So while it's on its way to Baker, at this point it will end at Fryeburg, where there will be a rail facility which is being built by another entity. And that rail facility then will provide the opportunity to take Bakken and Three Forks crude into the marketplace. It is bidirectional, so the line can actually be reversed, and the oil from Bakken and Three Forks can also be shipped north and join the Enbridge line at the Berthold station. So at any rate, it's a bit of a change. It's a little bit shorter, but it still is progress towards the ultimate goal of moving more Bakken and Three Forks crude into the marketplace. The differential in price between the NYMEX and the Bakken North Dakota crude continues, you know, to be significant enough to warrant these types of investments. It ranges anywhere from $8, I think, to $14 a barrel, and maybe even more from time to time. So everything seems to be in order, and we wanted to put this on a special meeting agenda so that we could have the hearing in September 1st.
In an effort to remove more trucks off the highway.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC2 and KC3 are related and will sound familiar. KC2, I move the commission issue a notice of filing, notice of informal hearing, and notice of opportunity for hearing in the applications for an amended certificate of corridor compatibility, an amended route permit, and application for waivers of procedures and time schedules for Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota LLC's Bakken Pipeline Project, U.S., case number PU-10612.
Second.
This, as you will recall, is a line that we have already previously noticed. It has been under construction, and what Enbridge is doing here is they're simply requesting a corridor and route changes to avoid the impacts to three wetlands in the in the construction area. This part of the Bakken line proposed by Enbridge is the part of the new line in the north route out of Berthold up into Canada near the Lignite, city of Lignite. There's some deviations to avoid these wetlands. And interesting to note, I guess, that even in northwestern, especially in northwestern North Dakota, there are some wetland issues that probably haven't been around for perhaps decades, as a matter of fact. So at any rate, they need to deviate. It is, while they're very slight deviations, they are outside the corridor. So what we're noticing today is both the opportunity for hearing and then also an informal hearing. I'll just get the dates for all of those down for you. The informal hearing in the matter is being scheduled to begin on August 24th at 2:30 here in the Commission Hearing Room. Comments and requests for a formal hearing must be received by August 23rd. So the public has, with this notice, until August 23rd to request a formal hearing should they want one. If there's not a request for a formal hearing and one's not granted, then we will have an informal hearing on August 24th here in the hearing room.
All in favor?
Aye.
Along the same lines, KC3, I move the Commission issue a notice of filings, notice of informal hearing, and notice of opportunity for hearing in the applications for amended certificate of corridor compatibility and amended route permit and application for waivers of procedures and time schedules for Enbridge Pipelines North Dakota LLC's Beaver Lodge Loop Project, case number PU10613.
Second.
Again, it's part of the same ultimate line, although this is the Beaver Lodge to Berthold section of the line. Again, this was heard previously. The corridor certificate and route permit were issued. In this case, there are a couple of deviations. One is a proposed deviation to provide a staging area, basically, because there's a depth issue underneath a BNSF railway. They're going to need to go deeper than previously thought, so there's just a little area there to the west of Berthold. And then there's also a deviation around a Minuteman missile site, which is also just to the west of Berthold. So again, pretty minor deviations, but outside of the corridor certificate, so it does require at least the opportunity for a hearing and then an informal hearing. The dates are the same as the previous one, August 23rd for a request for a formal hearing, August 24th the scheduled informal hearing here in the Public Service Commission hearing room.
All in favor?
Aye.
And that ends the items in my portfolio.
That ends the items on the regular agenda. We do have an admin coming up after this.
Any questions?
Are there any final comments? If not, we'll take questions.
The question I have, of course, is the projected cost for the Bakken Link.
Of course you do. I remember the original cost was about $250 million, but I suspect the cost for the shorter one is less than that. And let me just see if I have that information. If not, Pat, we'll have to get it for Dave.
Can you tell me how far along the corridor for 2 and 3? You mentioned it's outside the...
Yeah, I think it was only 250... Pat, how wide was the corridor? 250 feet. So, it does highlight a challenge, of course, when you cite and the companies like to do this, a narrower corridor. Of course, it does leave you less wiggle room within that corridor in case deviations that weren't anticipated are necessary, and this is one of those situations.
And as the wetlands that they need to skirt, were those wetlands not there before?
Well, I don't know, and we'll certainly find that out at the informal hearing. But just knowing what has happened in northwestern North Dakota this spring and summer, it wouldn't surprise me if they weren't. And what exactly designation of wetlands they are and how permanent they've been and how intermediate perhaps there's been water in them, I don't know. But it does not surprise me that there are some water issues that maybe weren't anticipated in that part of the state.
I guess I'm a little less... I mean, I assume that the missile site has always been there, and also the
I've seen
railroad
it many times.
Track.
Yeah.
How could they not anticipate this issue before they...
That's the exact question I had when we received these deviation requests. How could, for one thing, that the railroad track is has been a point of a lot of discussion in the initial hearing, the missile silo as well, because of course you might recall that the footprint for the initial Berthold station upgrades was all on the east side of the railroad track, which was exactly the problem that was created with regard to the highway transportation and the safety issues. The new now we're talking about the west side of those same railroad tracks, and just to the west of those railroad tracks, not very far, you can see the missile silo. It was there at that time, but at any rate, perhaps they didn't have all of the consultation with the Department of Defense that they should have had. I don't know, but we'll find those things out at the informal hearing if there's not a formal one.
Yeah, in terms of just one more question about bottom link, so I get that clear. It's reversible, and that's basically if Keystone XL is not built?
Well, no, that's a good question. Actually, there is, because of the proposed rail facility at Freiburg, there is market access to, with rail pretty much anywhere that you can send the train. It's a reversible or bidirectional, because depending on market situations, that is to say capacity in the Enbridge line, for example, which of course is what the Berthold station is an on-ramp onto the Enbridge line. If there's a price issue, capacity issues, demand issues, say in Clearbrook, Minnesota, then this oil can go that direction. If the greater market opportunities are somewhere else, it can be reversed and it can be sent to the southwest and then onto the rail at Freiburg. And ultimately, should the TransCanada Keystone XL get built, I think, like I said, most of the producers around here are hopeful that it will get built, because there is at least 100,000 barrels per day of capacity expected on that line for Bakken and Three Forks crude, then ultimately would end up there. I was trying to remember. Yeah, Pat.
The cost on the Bakken?
Yes.
$126.5 million.
Okay, so roughly half of what the original money would have been, amount would have been.
Can you just tell me what is the reason for the less expense?
Oh, because the original letter of intent was the entire line to go from the Berthold station all the way to Baker, Montana, and then be an on-ramp onto the Keystone XL. With some of the politics that have sort of plagued the Keystone XL, the uncertainty of it even being built, I guess, and then the urgency of capacity necessity, Quintana Capital Group and Bakken Link have decided to at least build half of the line and terminate it with a rail facility at Freiburg, so that it still allows them some access to market.
Okay, so instead of going from Berthold to Baker, they're going from Berthold to Freiburg?
Roughly half the distance, which would explain why it's roughly half the cost.
What is half the distance, please?
144 miles. It's actually 122 miles of trunk line. There's another couple of smaller lateral lines onto it, but so the trunk line is basically 122 miles.
And it originally was, what, 250?
Roughly.
Okay. We talked about bidirectional pipeline.
Yes.
Could you just explain to me, isn't all pipeline bidirectional?
Well, depending on pumping stations and other valves and other capacities, but for the most part, most transmission lines are designed to go one direction to some specific termination point, some market, some hub somewhere that is either probably then from there it would be redistributed to refineries and other terminals. But yeah, theoretically it all can be reversed. But let's take for example the Enbridge line that we've just talked about. That line 26, as they call it, was for many, many years a north to south line. It took some modifications to make it a south to north line. Instead of requiring future modifications to reverse the flow, these lines are now being built with the ability to reverse the flow, at any time that the market provides the opportunity.
And essentially, there has to be some design features built into a pipeline for it to be able to flow both ways at a
that it traditionally doesn't. That's exactly right. And I don't know if it's simply the flipping of a switch or if it's the closing and reopening of some valves. This 122 miles has no pumping station on it. It does have six receipt points, and the receipt points provide an adequate pressure to keep the oil flowing at least for a capacity of 65,000 barrels per day. I suspect that with the potential capacity of 100,000 barrels per day, it may require a pumping station or two along the line.
And the line that we're talking about here is it 65,000?
Its initial capacity would be 65,000 barrels per day with a potential capacity of 100,000 barrels per day with other modifications.
Okay. And basically the market advantage to doing it this way is that they can flow to the east if they get a better price or flow to the west.
That's exactly right. You know, rail has been an interesting phenomenon, and I would never have believed it if you'd have told me that this was going to happen 5 years ago, this being that there would be a whole bunch of rail facilities and that there would actually be an economical case for moving oil by rail. But because we are somewhat constrained in the Bakken Three Forks, that differential between the NYMEX price and the price that our producers are getting does provide some opportunity for some more expensive transportation. And so rail seems to be working. Rail does raise other issues with me, such as safety issues. I mean, pipelines, while not perfect, as we know, still are the safest way to move petroleum products, including crude oil. And to this point, we haven't had any major accidents with rail, but the more that's out there, of course, there's more potential for that.
I mean, do you think that rail is going to be seen eventually as a substitute for pipeline?
I personally do not think that. I just don't think the economics nor the safety or even the environmental concerns are better with rail than they are with pipeline. So ultimately, I think it's just a matter of lag. I just think it's a temporary fix for now. It provides more flexibility, for sure, at this point. One thing about a train, you can change its direction halfway en route to its original destination. So that, you know, that does provide, again, that provides some more economic flexibility that adds to the value of rail. But that's not necessarily the way you want to move product either.
Do you know offhand how many rail loading facilities of this
sector? I don't know offhand. In fact, I looked at this not too long ago on the Pipeline Authority website, and I want to say there were maybe five, six, or seven, and now we know of two relatively new ones. I mean, there's a new one being proposed, built at this Freiburg one, and I think at Berthold. Is that right, Pat, or am I? Yeah, I'm not sure about Berthold. There's another one that we just learned about, and I've like I say, I used to keep track of all these things in my head.
Do you know if the BN and CP Rail have increased their number of tanker cars in their fleet?
I don't know that they have. I do know that the economy, the national economy, has provided opportunity because the movement of other products has been, of course, somewhat hurt, obviously, by the national economy. That's presented opportunity for tanker cars. I don't know that they've had to add new ones. They very well could have, but I do know that the hurting economy in the nation has provided more tanker cars than would otherwise have been available.
The economics of all this are fascinating. With the price of oil right now and how it's driving transportation, but also how it's interacting with other commodities. I recently heard a presentation that highlighted this. I thought quite well. You know, we've talked a lot about the cheap gas that's available that's flowing on through these shale gases. It's driven down the price of gas to $4. The presentation that I saw indicated that they thought the price of gas would actually be rising because of the interplay between tight oil and shale gas, in such that if you're basically the labor force, the pipes, the kind of equipment you use are all... then the types of companies that are involved in it are somewhat interchangeable. If you're a company looking to invest in either liquids, shale oil, or shale gas, more and more they're suspecting that there's going to be a rush towards oil because the returns are so much greater. And there may not be as much activity in gas, which will eventually drive up the price of natural gas and maybe reach an equilibrium. But it's that same sort of dynamic, I think, with rail and pipeline. It's just the price of oil is so great right now that it's causing a lot of things to happen that wouldn't otherwise.
I guess I've just seen a lot of tanker cars recently, and some of them look kind of new to me. So
yeah, they're well. You know, it's probably not a bad business to get into these days. I believe some cars that have previously been used for moving, for example, ethanol, have been diverted to the Bakken for moving crude oil. I also know that the traffic on the rail lines has had an impact on the movement of agricultural products as well, and the logistics of moving these big unit trains has become more and more important. Probably be the best way to put it is become more and more important, a lot more precise to meet the growing demands. And as we head into the fall, and we're all very familiar with the big harvest seasons, it'll be interesting to see how all of this works together.
Have you heard the same? I mean, obviously, during the harvest season, you hear complaints about the availability of rail cars. Have you heard that many complaints, if any, from the oil industry about the availability of tanker cars?
I have not, but I don't know that they'd call us if there was a problem, but I don't think there is. I've never heard a complaint about availability of tanker cars.
And with the recent economic downturn, we have heard less about lack of availability for grain cars, so for grain hoppers as well. I think a lot of it's the result of the economic downturn. Now, if the economy rebounds, I think we'll probably start to hear a lot more about that.
Can you humor me for a second? I saw a vehicle the other day that looked just like a police vehicle, and it had a railroad badge on the side. It had bar lights, and it was painted up like a police car, except it said railroad.
They have a green stripe on it? I think they usually do.
I don't know about the gray. I didn't see a green stripe. But does the Public Service Commission have any – I mean, can the railroad just paint up a car to look like a cop car and drive it around?
That was in our last budget. That's the new PSC.
Our rail inspectors.
Rail inspectors. Police program.
No, we don't. But I do know rail security has become a bigger issue, obviously. It's always been a pretty big issue. It's precious cargo.
Okay. If there are no other questions, we will close the regular portion of the agenda, have bill signing, and probably in about 3 minutes be back for the administrative portion of the agenda.